Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. I promise new dates. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We did have a pretty good time at Drug City on Friday at the Fountain. Had my son on, also Chuck Jacobs, who runs the Fountain over there, making us some old fashions. This guy, Luke Jones, joined us along with George Shulin. You'll be hearing that all week long as we talk some baseball, some science, some Dundalks in Pennsylvania, amongst other things. All are brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. 0% financing throughout the month of October. And our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare, my oil change light came on Friday. If your oil change light comes on, there's a Jiffy Lube right around the corner from you. Make sure you go find them. We'll be talking more about them. I'm doing some charity stuff this week. I thought I was going to be doing baseball playoff games. I thought we were going to be flying somewhere, Minnesota, Houston. It would have been Houston. Instead, we're watching TV here this week and getting ready for the Detroit Lions to come to town after a weekend in London. I thought it'd be a good opportunity. Luke had a long conversation with Dennis that we've run from Thursday from Dennis's show. And Dennis is away this week a little bit, having a good time himself. If you get over to Coons Baltimore Ford, I have my Coons logo on here. I have not really had a chance with Luke other than in the early morning in Arlington, Texas, where you and I did several hours of radio in the hotel after it was an aborted trip down there. Although I did have some delicious Texas barbecue waiting for my wife on Sunday night, so she was very pleased with that. We haven't had a chance to like really sort of pick up where we go from here. And you and I fought most of the way home in the car and on the flight about the off season and baseball off season and football off season and how it's different. It's definitely different. And, you know, one part of it is sitting here the next 3 weeks and watching the other teams play every night, where in the NFL, you lick your wounds, you feel bad, you lose a playoff game, you watch some games the following Sunday. You and I would usually go to the Super Bowl before Chad Steele got involved. Baseball's different. We're not going to the World Series. We're going to watch. We'll watch these games all week long and see how it turns out. Certainly not as good for Atlanta, for LA, for the Orioles, for the better seeds, for how taking a week off and the bye week affects all of this. But you've had a little while to like marinate on it. And I know it was more difficult in the aftermath for you and I to discuss anything other than what the hell happened in Texas last night. But now that it plays out and there's an off season and the thoughts of who are we dealing for what? Because it really feels like to me, if you're a fan, you're waiting for Mike Elias to do things in this offseason. And this is an offseason where I think trading Austin Hayes, Ryan Mountcastle, some of the guys that have been around, I think one of the reasons this hurts so bad, and maybe even for you as a journalist being around this team, this is a group of guys that have been together since they were puppies. I mean, one of the things Ryan Ripken talks about is playing with all of these guys, and now they've arrived. It feels early to break up the band, but between Westberg, Kowser, even Henderson brand new and Holiday coming in the pipeline, this is going to be a different team in April, Luke.
It is. I think the question is how different. And let's be clear. Some of the problems that we're going to be talking about are a product of having too many players, too much organizational depth at certain spots. And then how do you marry that with the idea of getting better, not just being happy to be here, because they did that this year. They had this amazing season that should always be remembered fondly. I think other than the three World Series teams, I think you could make a case for this season being as gratifying as just about any other beyond that, just because of, you know, relative to the expectations going into the year and how far they've come in 2 years. But the difference is now, and I wrote about this over the weekend at BaltimorePositive.com, is we're now in the transition phase between happy to be here, and that's not just for fans, but I think the Orioles themselves, to how do you get over the October hump? I think the good news is, I think it's very clear what they need, and it's not as though they need half a dozen pieces necessarily. You know, I think a lot of this is going to be solved from within, and a lot of this is going to be solved with Gunnar Henderson's going to be a year older. Adley Rutschman's going to be a year older. Jordan Westberg, if he's still here, is going to be a year older. But you have all these players at AAA Norfolk right now. And we saw this play out over the second half of this past season, whether you're talking about a Colton Cowser, whether you're talking about a Heston Kerstad, who did get, you know, his cup of more than a cup of coffee.
I forgot about
not a
him,
whole
by
lot
the way.
More than that. Yeah.
They got so many prospects, I forget about them.
Yeah, you have him. You have someone like Kobe Mayo, who is at AAA Norfolk, corner infielder, who I don't think is going to be there very long next year. You have Jackson Holliday, where the question is going to be, is he on the opening day roster, or is he going to be more like Rutschman and you see him arrive Memorial Day weekend or something along those lines? You have not as much on the pitching side, but you do have a couple pitchers who have reached a AAA level that could become interesting over the course of next season. So what I just laid out there is a good problem to have, because something is going to have to give here, because you do have a logjam. You do have guys at AAA Norfolk. I didn't even mention someone like Kyle Stowers or Joey Ortiz, who had a great season at AAA Norfolk and was stuck there, you know, because the Orioles were crowded in the infield. So if you're Mike Elias, you have the challenge this offseason of striking the right balance between, you know, understanding you have some positions you want to augment. Clearly, they're looking for at least a top half of the rotation starting pitcher. I think at the very least, you're aiming for a number three, you know, to go along with Kyle Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez. Those three in any order, you're identifying that, whether it comes via trade or you're dipping your toes into the free agent market. You clearly need to do some work with your bullpen. And a lot of that's going to be dependent on, is Tyler Wells going to be a starter moving forward? Is DL Hall going to be a starter moving forward? If they're not, then I think those two, along with Yennier Cano, there's the makings of a good foundation for a bullpen, but you're still not going to have Felix Bautista. So I think you're targeting a high leverage reliever, whether it's via trade or that's something that you can get in free agency. And again, I think that's something that's not going to, you know, that's not going to be $100 million kind of contract where we're talking about John Angelos and the realities of what he is or isn't going to be willing to spend. So you have that. On the offensive side of things, as I mentioned, I think a big question is, and you brought this up, mentioning Austin Hayes or a Jordan Westberg, just as examples. But I think you have a case for the Orioles where they stand right now. You have a group of veteran guys, and I'm not talking about Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman. I'm talking about basically everyone behind them that played in the major leagues this year. You have a group of guys. Many of them have been here for at least a few years. And you're talking about guys that you're familiar with, guys that have offered you a high floor, and guys that, frankly, they were contributors towards winning 101 games this year. So you don't want to be dismissive of what they contributed. However, how many of those guys are going to be here for the long haul, understanding that we're talking about guys that are into year two, year three of arbitration? In the case of an Anthony Santander, he's a year away from free agency. And I'm just using that as an example. But you have guys like that. And then you have these guys that are at AAA Norfolk or guys that have gotten a cup of coffee like Kerstad, like a Colton Cowser. Jordan Westberg got more than that in the second half of this season. But you have guys that have less experience. They're not as proven, but they certainly on paper have a much higher floor. So if you're Mike Elias, you're going to have to make some moves. I'd be shocked if this team isn't making at least a couple notable to significant trades this offseason.
Trading guys you've heard of that you like, that you might have their jersey.
Yeah.
Other than Rutschman and Henderson, feel in Rodriguez, I guess, the rest of
Bradish.
Them? Bradish. Yeah. Fair enough.
I think other than those four, now, let's be clear. I'm not saying that those are the only four that I would say will not get traded. There are other guys that they have that I would think are very unlikely to be traded, let's say.
Mullins.
But, yes, and the reason why is not because Cedric Mullins is coming off of a good season, but you look at their system right now. To me, we saw enough of Colton Cowser. I think he's going to hit eventually in the major leagues, but he struggled with the bat. But the big thing was, defensively, he's not a center fielder in the major leagues. Their closest thing they have to a center fielder in their system is the Enrique Bradfield kid that they just drafted, who is at least another 4 year away. I think best case scenario, you're talking about him in 2025. So I'm with you on that. Unless you're trading Cedric Mullins and you're acquiring some other team center fielder in a different deal or something like that. Yeah. But the point is, you got to strike the right balance here of wanting to continue your upward trend as far as making the playoffs and taking the next step. And it doesn't mean you have to win 101 games again.
because we've seen this postseason that that is not the requisite for playing in the ALCS. That's obvious. So, but you want to put yourself in position to make the playoffs, take the next step. So how are you balancing the fact that you have 16 guys that are arbitration eligible on this roster, second most in the majors behind the Yankees at 17? You know, I think a couple other teams have 16 as well. The Mets,
well,
I
that
think
takes
the Rays
the payroll
well.
Through the
point
roof
is that's
without
a lot,
doing anything,
a lot of
right?
guys. Well, and that's part of this, and that doesn't, you know, payroll is going to be the big unknown here, right? I mean, that's just the reality. Whether you're on the optimistic side of things, the realistic side of things, or the pessimistic side of things, it's somewhere it's going.
Well, I've
to,
watched
you know,
the Angelos
know,
family for 30 years, so
to go
call
up.
Me the pessimist, because I mean, I've seen every decision from here forward is going to involve John Angelos. I mean,
right.
John Angelos had nothing to do with drafting Colton Cowser or Gunnar or any of that. John's now an expert because John's got the money. And I've seen John's ego involved in all of this the last year. Boy, if there's a way to screw it up, that's going to be the way to screw it up. The thing that's going to screw this up is going to be the Angelos family. I don't. That's not Nestor speaking. That should be a fair warning to anybody that's had their eyes open that this is going to be at the pleasure of the Angelos family. And that's when things have always gotten a little weird here. You know, I mean, to me, I love the success. I love the team. I got my jacket still out because it's a little winter kind of jacket. I have zero confidence that when Elias goes down the hallway and explains all this to Angelos that, oh, Mullins is going to be making $12 million this year. Well, let's get rid of him. You know, I mean, like that, like, what are we talking about with these 16 arbitration? Like, what kind of money are we when we put a dart on these players for a salary in 2024 and trying to figure out who's expendable and who's not? Part of it is how much they cost, right? I mean, the right. cost was part of Mancini at the end. The cost is part of any of these guys who get to the point where they ain't playing on the rookie deal anymore.
Right, right. And look, there are projections at work here. And I'll disagree. I don't think John Angelos is making calls on specific players, but budget-wise, across the board, that's where you're talking about with Mike Elias. And it's like, okay, we were paying this group of 16 players who are, you know, and some of these guys are further along in arbitration than others, right? I mean, Anthony Santander, and I'm using MLB trade rumors, their projections are usually pretty darn spot on as it pertains to what guys will likely get in arbitration. Anthony Santander is the big one. He's going to be $12.7 million in the final year of his free agency. That's the projection for him. So you're talking, you know, that's a sizable raise from where he was this past year. In the case of a Mullins or an Austin Hayes, they're going to be up just north of $6 million for each of those guys. So let's be clear. That doesn't mean they're going to clear the deck or anything crazy like that, but
Dude, you just spent $25 million. You just spent $25 sure. million. Dollars. $25 million. That's how John Angelos is going to look at it and say, you're taking my payroll from 40 to 70, and we haven't even improved the team. We don't even have a pitcher.
Well, it's not that big of an increase because those guys weren't making zero last year. The point is, yes, their payroll is going to go up. How much it's going to go up, how much that's going to impact what they spend on potential free agents, which they have dipped their toes into it, but it's been, you know, it's been Kyle Gibson, which was $10 million. It's been an Adam Frazier who was $8 million. You know, it's been, you know, it was Michael Gibbons who was $5 million down the drain because he was awful this year and couldn't stay healthy. So, you know, it's not as though they haven't spent it all, but it hasn't been very much. And they're going to be forced to now spend more on the arbitration side. So,
but it's just something we haven't talked about. It's something the fans haven't discussed in the least in 6 years, other than we suck. Who are we drafting? Oh my God, we're good. Let's win the World Series. It kind of happened really quick, right? I mean, there was no middle phase for this. The middle phase is, well, pretend they won 87 games and got bounced in a wild card game, you know, instead of winning 101. Pretend they had a good year, because they had a great year. But just pretend it was a good year and you're building up into this. The salary comes very, very quickly. And for all of these guys, and we haven't talked about Henderson and we haven't talked about Rutschman and extending those guys. That's where the the real nut is. The nut isn't whether Mullins is making six up from two or Santander is making 12 up from six. It's really about, oh, Henderson. Oh, we want to keep him around in 27, 28, 29. We're making real commitments. That's $100 million. That's just $100 million straight out of the gate. You're going to have to pay him $30, $40 million a year and put that down on your books down the line.
Well, it's not. No, you're not paying him $30 or $40 million a year if you extend him now. You're extending him. You're gonna pay him more than he's making now, which is nothing. There's opportunity cost involved there. I mean, you're certainly going to pay more now, but the beauty about an extension for someone like a Gunnar Henderson is year 7, 8, 9. And look, would he sign a 9-year deal right now? I have no idea. He's a Scott Boras client. It is what
it'd be
it
a $300 million vacuum, deal if he signed a 9-year deal, right? It would be 200 at least, right?
It probably 200 would sound, it wouldn't be 300 because you're talking about 6 years of, you know, 5 more years of club control for someone like him. That would be much more cost controlled, but it's a lot. It's a lot.
And it gets in the way of buying a pitcher.
It does. If you're going to do it, that they don't have to do that. That's proper responsible long-term planning, but they don't have to do that to build their 2024 roster. Gunnar Henderson's not going anywhere.
And why Mike Elias would care about 2028 and John Angelos, who we should all hope that family doesn't own this team 5 years from now. I mean, like, at the end of the day, I'll write that all day long. I'll scream that to the highest hosannas. Like, you should hope that when the bill comes due for Henderson, Rutschman, whoever they sign, Rodriguez, if he becomes that guy, that they're not the ones paying that bill. So to some degree, this is about John Angelos getting a champagne shower again 11 months from now while Stan Charles watches on instead of asking questions. I would say for John and for Mike, their short-term thought isn't about Henderson down the line, but the fans are. I mean, the fans were already asking about it back in May and June. So where – and it's – Luke is here, by the way, and you and I got into this fight in Arlington on the way home. It's so different than football, isn't it? I mean, just talking about it because of arbitration and the players and where the Orioles are with this vast riches of all of these young players and how best to manage – the human capital of that, to say we can't have three shortstops. You know, we can't have six outfielders. You know, pitching's different. We can have all the pitching we want, but some of the position players, they are going to get in the way of each other. And I think that opens up an unlimited amount of things they could do. I mean, they really have a wide variety of a lot of things and a lot of directions they can go in. And this is the first time Mike Elias and John Angelos are going to sit down and talk about where it goes from here. Because there was nothing to talk about the last 5 years other than get a player, keep Brandon's head together, get out there and play these games so we can get our next Colton Cowser, so we can get our next Heston Kerstad. Well, they got all of that now. And they have, to your point, anybody in the industry would say, they have an embarrassment of riches. They have an incredible treasure trove and wealth of things they could do. Now, how they manage that. The one thing they don't have a lot of is money, although they'll cry about they have more money than you think they have. Let's put it to you that
way. I don't disagree with you on that. And the one thing that they don't have as much of in their system is on the pitching side. They don't have as much. I mean, it's really the embarrassment of riches is their position player depth in their system. So, yeah, that's where you look at where they stand. And let me just – I'm going to run off the names for you right now because – you know, Santander, we mentioned Hayes, we mentioned Mullins. Yes, cost, you know, it's going to be part of the conversation, especially when you have Kerstad coming, you have Cowser in the system. You know, you have guys, you know, some other guys that are infielders right now who could eventually become outfielders. So you are going to look at that. But I think where it starts to become more interesting is, you know, Jorge Mateo, $2.9 million is his projection. I'm guessing Jorge Mateo is probably not going to be back. Certainly not going to be back in any kind of a capacity where he's going to be playing nearly as often. Ramon Urias is set to make $2 million. I'd be shocked if both those guys are back. I think if I had to predict right now, I'm guessing both guys are gone, but certainly would only think one is back if either are back. So You have that. I think some of these bullpen arms are interesting. We've forgotten about Dylan Tate. He missed the entire season with forearm and elbow issues. If he underwent Tommy John surgery, the Orioles never announced it. You know, they announced when Felix Bautista had Tommy John surgery. So where's Dylan Tate in this? Has he recovered? Can he pitch? He was a pretty big part of their bullpen in 22, you know, especially late in the season. So where is he? But he's owed $1.5 million projected in arbitration. C.N.L. Perez, $1.3 million. Cole Irvin, $1.8. $800,000 for Keegan Aiken. Jacob Webb, $1.2 million. Tyler Wells, $2.3 million. Again, these are all projections from MLB trade rumors, so they're not official, but it's giving you an idea of players who are becoming more, you know, more expensive. Now, some of the guys I just named aren't even necessarily guys that you're going to want back next year. You know, like Keegan Aiken, I'm guessing there's a decent chance he's going to be non-tendered. Maybe he's outrighted to Norfolk, something like that. I don't think there's a place for him in this bullpen, certainly not on the opening day roster. So, you know, you kind of go through the list. You know, Ryan McKenna, you know, he's not a fourth outfielder. He's probably, you know, a fifth or a sixth outfielder. He's going to be projected to make $740,000, which isn't a lot, but what does he really give you relative to guys that you have coming? So the point is, of those 16 guys that are arbitration eligible, there's a solid percentage of those guys probably aren't going to be back.
You just write just them like off. On the yeah, they're role players, yeah, right? But just that's like different on the than Austin Hayes or Mullins and saying right. We're going to trade them for a pitcher to make room for Kowser or make room for Kerstedt, right?
Well, and that's where this is challenging, and it's a good challenge. Again, these are good problems to have, right? We're not talking about scarcity of talent. We're talking about an abundance of talent.
And but they have no sunk cost other than Chris Davis, whatever he's left on their books.
The deferred money. And right.
They don't have dumb money. They didn't go dumb into Givens, right? That was last year's money. So that's like OBJ this year for the Ravens. It's dumb money, but it's a one-year dumb money thing. It's not the same problem Lamar would be or Ronnie Stanley or Marlon Humphrey would be.
Right, exactly. It's kind of the old school of thought is there's no such thing as a bad one-year contract, even though, yes, there are. And, yeah, you mentioned Beckham making $15 million.
Oh, the old man still upset about Xavier Hernandez. That's another.
but right. And on the free agent side, they have five free agents right now. Kyle Gibson, Adam Frazier, Shintaro Fujinami, Aaron Hicks, and Jack Flaherty. I'm guessing none of those guys are going to be back. You know, I like Kyle Gibson, but you got to aim higher than that. You know, in the same way that Kyle Gibson was the attempt to aim higher from Jordan Lyles the year before. So,
well, Gibson, you couldn't even give him the ball with the season on the line. I mean, literally, they didn't give him the ball.
I mean, he is what he is. He's on a playoff club, and we even saw this by the Orioles standards by the end of the year. On a playoff club, he's at best a fourth, but in most cases, a fifth starter or a long man out of the bullpen. And I think where the Orioles stand going into the offseason with their starting rotation, Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez at the top. Mike Elias said the other day, John Means, his elbow's fine. Like, they think it was, you know, he had a little bit of a tired arm in the way that guys sometimes late in spring training get a little bit of a tired arm, and then they're fine a week or two later. No concerns there. So John Means and Dean Kramer, who I think ideally, Dean Kramer would be my fifth starter. And ideally, just because of the unknown of the health and the fact that he hasn't really pitched in nearly two full years, other than a handful of starts, you know, I'd like John Means to maybe be my number four starter. So I'm targeting, whether it's free agency or, and I think this is the much bigger avenue, the more likely avenue, trade, because you have all these pieces, whether you're talking about some veterans or whether you're talking about trading a Colton Cowser or trading a Joey Ortiz, who's a top 100 prospect, or trading some other combination of guys. What I'd really like to see them do is acquire a legitimate number three starter, acquire a legitimate top half of the rotation guy, like Nathan Eovaldi would have been, like Jordan Montgomery would have been for them. You know, we saw this firsthand, what the Rangers did. Rangers game one, Jordan Montgomery, look how he pitched against the Astros. You know, they won the opener of the ALCS, you know, with a pitcher like that. So that's Mike Elias' priority number one for me, is add someone that you project to be no worse than your number three starter. If you do that, and then you have John Means as your number four, and you have Dean Kramer as your number five. And then, you know, we can talk about someone like a Cade Povich, you know, whether he's dealt or whether he's still in AAA to begin next year. You know, we could talk about that. Because if you do that, Nestor, then that clears up Tyler Wells to me to be in your bullpen moving forward. And you're going to need that because you don't have Felix Bautista. That, to me, clears the deck for DL Hall to just become a late inning reliever, which a lot of talent evaluators the last year or two kind of thought that might be his best role anyway. Maybe he becomes your Josh Hader. You know, one of the bright spots, we didn't talk about it too much because there weren't many bright spots and there was so much disappointment. DL Hall pitched his butt off in that division series. He pitched really well, missed a lot of bats, and did a nice job for them. So, you know, you have those two with Cano. Add another bullpen piece, you know, whether it's via trade or via free agency, you know, go out there and certainly sign someone better than Michael Gibbons, which they attempt, you know, they made that attempt and it didn't work out. It happens. You're going to whiff sometimes. But, you know, if you do that on the pitching side, I think you have a pitching staff on paper. Now, health is always the great determining factor here. And spring training next year, low key, is going to be an anxious time because Grayson Rodriguez coming off of a career high in innings. Kyle Bradish coming off a career high in innings. Dean Kramer coming off a career high in innings. That right there, a lot of times when pitchers have injury concerns for overuse and workload issues and things like that, a lot of times it doesn't show up until the following spring. Now, I am not predicting that. Let's be clear. This is not
We
Luke
had
Jones
plenty of
being.
problems with that this year, between Means, between Givens, between Tate. I mean, there were other there's
It's
somebody
part
else
of
I'm
it.
missing too, right? Somebody else was supposed to pitch a bunch this year and didn't. I
I'm trying to
mean,
think off
they
the top
shut
of my head.
Wells down for and sent him. I mean, but they
The
pitchers get
point,
injured. If you
pitchers
mention
break,
15 pitchers, five of them are going to be injured next year.
right. So, but my point is just what I laid out, which was not my priorities there are acquiring a number three starter or better and getting another high leverage bullpen arm, you know, to add to what I would plan Wells and DL Hall to be in your bullpen with Cano, you know, and we can talk about whether you bring back CNL Perez. We can talk about Danny Coulomb. We can talk about Jacob Webb, you know, but the point is that they've got some work to do to their bullpen because Felix Bautista is not coming through that bullpen door in 2024. That's a spring of 25 reality for the Orioles at this point. So you need to.
With Fuji, by the way.
He's gone. I mean, you can't. He's a free agent. I think if I had seen progress, like if he had started out shaky, really shaky, but then got better, but it was just this up and down. I mean, it was
Well,
like
they
the
couldn't put
most.
him on the postseason roster, and that you can't
Right,
trust him.
exactly.
That's the end. Yeah.
I mean, let's face Nestor, let's call a spade here. They put Brian Baker on their postseason roster over Fujinami. Baker had pitched in the major leagues once since late July. Now, I think you could disagree with that call. Personally, I would have rather seen Cole Irvin than Brian Baker on the postseason roster. At least he would have given you some length in game two when you were down 9-2 and you know had no real pragmatic, you know, practical chance of coming back. But the point is that they showed how little they told you exactly how they felt about him when he didn't even make the postseason roster because they had other guys at the back end of that bullpen they didn't trust that they took over him. So, you know, they've got some work to do. It's not this incredible mountain of work to do, but they have some work to do on that front. And then on the flip side, you know, with the offense, outfield and infield, you know, who are you holding on to? Who are the veterans that you value? You know, Santander's, we've talked about him for two or three off seasons now in terms of whether he'd be dealt. You know, that was a different conversation 2 years ago, of course. And
We had
you know,
Mountcastle in the
he's a
summer.
year.
We talked about him too, right? About
Yeah,
deals.
but you know, in Santander's case, you're talking about a $12 million player this coming year. Last year before free agency, most teams, even like teams like the Rays, you know, teams that have been in that category. They've looked to deal guys like that. But if you're the Orioles, if you're me looking at the Orioles, if there's one area they need to get better with their offense, they were middle of the pack in home runs last year. And if you look at this postseason, Phillies near the top in home runs, Astros near the top in home runs, Texas near the top in home runs. Now, Arizona's the weird Cinderella outlier, right? But look at the rest of the teams in the division series who didn't make it through. Atlanta, near the top in home runs. The Dodgers, near the top in home runs. The Orioles, they could stand to add some home run pop. Now, some of that's going to just come from improvement. I think Gunnar Henderson's going to hit over 30 home runs next year.
But by the way, the left field cost them 20 home runs this year as a team.
On the right-hand side, yeah. And that's why you look at most of what they've drafted has been left-handed.
And by the way, save their pitchers 22.
Sure, exactly. There's right. But the point is,
but they're not going to hit a lot of home runs because they play 81 games in a barn.
Well, unless you're lefty, you know, it, left-handed hitters hit home runs at Camden Yards. It's still very homer friendly for left-handed hitting. I mean, that's why look at most of the Orioles' young bats. You know, in their system, they're lefties for the most part. But that is something that I think they need to add. So that's where I am very reluctant to look at dealing Anthony Santander, even if he might have. Not might. He definitely has more value than trying to trade Austin Hayes, for example. You know, Hayes does have one more year of club control, but Austin Hayes has also been a guy who is excellent in the first half of the season, and he's worn down the last 2 years, you know, in the second half.
I think so, you also like him in left field.
You do, but I guess my point is as I've thought about it more, if you had asked me this question in June, and I think I probably brought it up in passing a couple times, I probably said from a long-term standpoint, they'd probably look to deal Santander, but can you subtract 30 home runs from this lineup right now? As I just laid out that was,
where are they coming from?
Deficiency for them. I mean, Gunnar, you tell me Gunnar's going to hit more. Great. I'll sign off on that. If Westberg is their everyday third baseman or everyday second baseman, depending on how they want to align their infield, fine. I'll sign up for him hitting more than he hit, which he only hit a couple, but he did hit a lot of doubles this year. Jackson Holliday will be here at some point next year. That will be more power than Adam Frazier, let's say.
Well, they look at Kerstad as a power hitter, for sure.
Yeah, Kerstad, I'm glad you brought him up because he should have been the first name I mentioned because he's the guy, if he's playing right field or if he's your pseudo-regular DH, he's probably going to be a guy that you're going to be projecting a lot of power from. So it's not as though they don't have young guys that can do that, but do you want to subtract Santander from that formula when you know that recent history tells you, especially in October, when you're going up against elite pitching, you want to have some long ball ability because that is that's the way that you instantly change a game.
Well, add Mountcastle into that. If you get rid of Mountcastle and Santander in the offseason.
Yeah.
Where is the power coming from unless you're projecting Gunnar to hit 42 next year, you know?
Right, exactly. So, you know, and again, these are all good problems to have. They don't have to trade these guys, but you're trying to figure out, okay, who can we move on from that's a little bit older, more expensive, might not have as high of a ceiling long term to create an opportunity for this guy to come in who is younger. Yeah, he's cheaper, but more importantly, to the big picture of the baseball team and its quest to play deep in October, is guys that have more upside long term. So, you know, you want to create that. I mean, in the same way that the Orioles, you know, they're not going to go into the spring with any ideas of Jorge Mateo playing at all for them. I mean, probably not going to be on the roster. Why? Because, well, Jackson Holliday, even if it's not opening day, is at some point going to be there. It's just going to be a question of when and where is he going to play? Is he going to be their shortstop with Gunnar playing third? Or is he going to be their second baseman with Gunnar playing short? I mean,
well, if you take opening day, just opening day of this year, which wasn't that long ago, let's add the names into this, right? Kowser, Westberg, Kerstad, Henderson was up. I'm missing somebody that's coming.
Joey Ortiz was there for 5 minutes and then they didn't have room for
him. Like, so you're saying, okay, I love those guys. They're first round picks. They're core Orioles. They're not platoon players anymore. Mm-hmm. We're going to play them. Well, then you're pretty much saying that Mountcastle, Santander, and Hayes. Mateo, or, you know, what they're gone. Frazier, they're gone. All those guys would be gone. That makes all the sense in the world. I mean, these guys.
And
Mountcastle was the guy we're always trying to get rid of. I don't know. I tend to like him more. Some of these guys are like furniture for me now that they've become pile divers. Hayes, Mountcastle, Mullins. We were sitting around when these guys are losing 120 games with them. I think they smell different. Santander, too. I think they rule five. I think they smell different once they've marinated a couple of years here. where you'd be like, well, don't get rid of Mountcastle, don't get rid of Austin Hayes. Well, you want Kowser to play, you want Kerstad to play, you want Westberg to play. There's only 9 spots in the lineup.
Well, and this is where, and for anyone listening, I am not saying that they're going to trade all their veterans. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying you've got to figure out who you want to keep and who you want to trade from that entire pool. Now, there's something to be said because of how they handled Joey Ortiz this year, that he, despite the fact that he's a top 100 prospect and he might have great value in the eyes of other teams, the Orioles might not love him as a player. And that might be the reason why he was stuck at AAA. And look, he put up great numbers at AAA and he still has presumably good value to other teams. That might be a guy you look to trade. In the case of Colton Cowser, look, I think he's eventually going to hit. I don't think you should judge anyone on their first 65 plate appearances in the major leagues or whatever it was, but he struggled, right? And he certainly did not show an ability that he can play center field. So to me, that changes, you know, how you might view Cedric Mullins, at least for the next 12 months or 16 months or whatever it might be, 2 years. So you might, you know, Colton Cowser might be someone that you say, you know what? We love this guy. We've developed him into this player who is ready to play in the major leagues. He's the former, you know, a former top 5 overall pick in the major league draft. But you know what? He can be the centerpiece for us to go out and get that 2 years of club control, top half of the rotation starting pitcher from another team who is not at the same place in you know, trying to win and contend and things of that nature.
I mentioned
that
we can acquire that guy. He was the target back in July.
Yeah, I mean, just,
I don't know that would
example,
have changed anything last week, but maybe a year from next week that you bring him in, now you're talking about, you said you want a 3, you know,
at worst, I want a 3.
That's an argument for him and Rodriguez and Bradish to say, well, you know, now that sounds like something to deal with next October for Houston or Texas or whoever you see.
Sure. And Cease is just an example we're using, right? I mean, everyone understands that, but that's where you might look at it and say, okay, I'm not going to trade a veteran, but Colton Cowser might be the guy I trade in that spot. And he might be the guy along with a couple other lesser prospects that goes out and gets me a legitimate number 2 or number 3 starter that I can put in the top 3 with Rodriguez and Bradish. And then I've got a rotation that looks more legitimate with the understanding that Bradish and Rodriguez, while it certainly didn't go well for Grayson, but they have a postseason start under their belt now. They now know what it's like to pitch with that crowd noise and to go up against elite competition and know that the lights are bright. I mean, that's part of it now. When this team gets back to October, presumably, whether it's next October, the year after that, whenever. I mean, you never know. There are no guarantees. These are all guys who have some experience now. Now, it was failure, but you learn from failure, right? I mean, I made mention before this whole thing even started that, you know, the Braves, the Astros, the Dodgers, you know, all these teams in recent years, none of them won on their first try. So that's where the Orioles are trying to learn. You know, they're ticked off, a little embarrassed, but now it's a case of how do you take the next step? And what we just laid out, which is, my goodness, it's a huge pool of players, whether you're talking about vets and guys that are in the majors or prospects. And, you know, for Mike Elias, he's got to strike the right balance here. You don't want to trade too many veterans to the point where you take a step back because development is not linear. But at the same time, you don't want to be in a position where you're just hoarding guys at AAA. And, you know, Kyle Stowers is a great example of this. Does Kyle Stowers have as much trade value now as he would have had 18 months ago? No, because, you know, he failed in some small sample sizes for the Orioles, and, you know, he's kind of just wallowed at AAA. And he hasn't been bad at AAA, but, you know, he's a guy that if you traded him a year ago, would have had a little more value than he has now, most likely. So the point is, you know, they've got some challenging decisions to make. And I don't say that in a doom and gloom way. It's just the reality of what can you do to shape this roster, improve it, and maximize the value of the players that you have. We've talked in these terms for years with Eric DaCosta that every player is an asset, right? Every player is a chip. Every player has value attached to him. The Orioles are the same way with the 26 guys that played in the postseason and everyone else in their organization. So Mike Elias's challenge this offseason is trying to balance taking the next step and not wanting, you know, you don't want to trade veterans and take a step back with young guys, but at the same time, understanding that you want to do what you can to take the step forward. And that might involve trading a veteran or two, and it might involve trading a couple prospects here and there to go out and land a number three starting pitcher or a number two starting pitcher, to go out and land a guy that you can pencil into the eighth or ninth inning of your bullpen and feel great about him, to maybe even go out and land another bat that we're not even talking about now, because he recognizes what I did in saying, you know what, we might need a little more home run power, and maybe we're going to trade Anthony Santander, but you know what, we're going to go get this guy from this team as part of another trade who has 35 home run potential to add to the number four, number five spot in our lineup. So there are many ways to roster build. And in the case of Mike Elias, he's been in this build and add phase for the better part of 5 years now, but he's now much more in the phase of how are we augmenting? How are we tweaking? How are we changing things with the idea of getting better in the long term? And it's going to be interesting to see how he does with this, because this is, you know, we talked about this at the trade deadline a little bit. We talked about it a little bit last winter, but he is in a much different phase now as a general manager, and he's learning just like everyone else. You know, coaches and players learn, executives learn as well. And he's at a point now where, okay, you had a 101 win ball club that, you know, maybe played a little bit over its head, but they were, regardless, they were darn good. You know, I mean, that, don't take that away from them just because of what happened in the division series. But now the question is, how do you tweak? How do you augment? How do you manage 16 guys who are arbitration eligible? How do you go out and approach free agency to go see if you can land, you know, maybe not a big fish, but let's say a medium-sized fish after landing small fish the last few years in free agency? So, you know, that's part of it. And it's going to be interesting. It, you know, a lot of this happens behind closed doors because the Orioles are so tight-lipped on the baseball operations side. And baseball's offseason, as you laid out, is different inherently than the NFL, where everything is a big event. But it's going to be fascinating. And, oh, yeah, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, at least in passing, that over the weekend, you know, the Orioles also dealt with what up-and-coming organizations deal with. They lost Brad Selick, their director of draft operations. He's heading to the Nationals. I don't think it crushes them, but certainly a good person. You know, someone that had been one of the, you know, one of the rare holdovers from the Duquette era, who had actually stuck around and, you know, was integral with their drafts over the last 4 or 5 years. So, you know, there are other good people that I don't think they're going to miss a beat, but that right there is also a reminder of part of this. When you get good, when you build something like the Orioles are building, other teams take notice, and the Nationals took notice, and they hire away Brad Selick over the weekend. So yeah, that's just something else to keep in the back of your mind as the Orioles move forward in this quest to get better and to play deeper in October next year.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him in Owings Mills. He will not be talking baseball except when I make him talk baseball or Dennis makes him talk baseball. He's giving it up for October here. Detroit Lions coming to town. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road, presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We had some Raven scratch-off winners up at Hollywood Casino on Sunday, as well as on Friday over at the Fountain in Drug City. Luke joined us along with my longtime science companion at Dundalk High and Sparrows Point, George Shulin, as well as my son, who stopped by to talk about old fashions and proper cocktails and milkshakes at the Fountain at Drug City. You'll hear that all week long. We are rallying our Crab Cake Tour as well as our 25th anniversary here. I promise I'll get back to the countdown from 23 down. It's all brought to you by our friends at Curio Wellness and Far and Daughter. Important to be on the WNSD Tech Service, brought to you by Coons Baltimore 4. Dennis is on respite this week. He'll be back next week, but you can still get over Security Boulevard and make that happen anytime. Get on the tech service to get breaking news. And if that trade happens or that Mike Elias moment happens in November or December, you'll be the first to get it. In the meantime, we pine away and watch the Houston Astros take on the Texas Rangers and await the Detroit Lions. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, celebrating 25 years of madness. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.